Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey everybody, welcome to Dank Discussions. Today we're joined by Raymond Harari. Ray is the founder of Canalis Capital and a director at ICAN, Israel Cannabis. Thanks for joining us today, Ray.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me, Maynard.
Amazing, amazing. Doing great. Happy to have you on, definitely. So let our listeners know where you're located today.
Well, today I'm in Panama, where I'm based out of. Don't spend too much time here, but you know, had to make a pit stop, but I'm here.
That's awesome. Panama, that's very unique, obviously. You know, we have people all over the world, have people from South Africa, you know, from Spain, France. You know, there are, people are growing hemp all over the world, you know, and you know, Malta. And, you know, so I always get the chance to talk to people in all places of the world. Now, Panama is very unique, obviously. Now, tell me, can you tell me a little bit about what's going on there with Panama and cannabis?
Yeah, so, you know, we're still in very early stages of, you know, I guess the cannabis development cycle in Panama. You know, Latin America tends to be several years behind the rest of the world in, you know, technologies, culture, and you know, a couple other things. Stuff takes a bit longer to get down here. So, you know, we don't really have a law yet in place. We don't have, you know, any sort of legality for cannabis or for hemp here. But a couple of months ago, we had two laws be submitted on to the assembly, to the floor, to be, you know, hopefully legalized, one legalizing hemp and one legalizing cannabis. Obviously, you know, this still doesn't have, you know, regulations, frameworks, but it's a huge, huge step from where we were before. You know, where you couldn't, you know, even say the word cannabis, you know, people would look at you, you know, very wrong. There was a lot of stigma until, you know, things started changing around February, where we brought the first medical cannabis conference to Panama together with ICAN. We had 600 people, you know, really talk and discuss cannabis. You know, we had politicians, you know, ministers, people coming in and asking, and for the first time, seeing that there's, you know, actual, you know, real business and real responsibility and real people, you know, looking to do business in cannabis. So it's, you know, still a long way to go. But, you know, we seem to be on the right path.
That's great. You know, I think, you know, obviously in this industry, there's a lot of stigma in general. And I think, you know, I have some colleagues, some buddies who are involved in the, you know, the budding hemp growing in Baja California and different parts of Mexico. And I know it's legal in Uruguay. I also have, you know, some clients over there in Uruguay. And, you know, it's kind of, but there's like this negative perception, I think, from my generation, at least, where it's like, you know, I've been in Mexico, and in Mexico, it was, you know, like the cartel kind of ran this industry. And you know, it was dangerous, you know? And so how do we get away from that stigma and clean it up, so to speak, in Latin America, kind of get away from that view?
Well, that's, you know, one of the biggest challenges we're facing. You know, most of Latin America has some big, big baggage in terms of, you know, drug trafficking. You know, there were kidnappings, there was a lot of violence associated to drugs, you know, be it in Colombia or Mexico, which are the bigger ones, or, you know, the other countries in between that had some consumption, some production, some transit. You know, I'd say, you know, the best example to, you know, sort of see what the country does to try to fix that is what Colombia did. You know, Colombia legalized cannabis, but only in derivative oil and finished product form. So Colombia's prohibiting the commercialization of flower product or, you know, anything before oil. So, you know, that really helps people understand that you're not sort of, you know, going around grinding your cannabis, you know, rolling it to a joint and smoking it, because that's highly associated to, you know, drug use, drug trafficking, and the cartels. What they're doing is, you know, you go to the medic and you get, you know, oils, or you get pills or capsules, or, you know, any of those more sophisticated products that don't really bring that association so clearly. You know, that's still, you know, obviously it's early stages, but, you know, I think it's a way to sort of differentiate the way that drugs have been used in their common form over the past couple of decades, and, you know, how they will be used in the future.
Yeah, I mean, we face that same thing in, you know, even in California, less so, but in the United States, more generally, definitely, you know, where now, you know, CBD is federally legal. You know, people are starting to, you know, lessen on their stance on it. Even in, you know, very conservative states, places where you wouldn't even imagine, you know, they have different laws concerning it. But I think that, like what you said, you know, we have this idea of this, you know, we're going to get a pot cigarette, we're going to get a marijuana cigarette, everything's going to be high. And then when you have, you know, the oil, the refined product, it separates it in and of itself. I think it makes it more, you know, aside from, you know, being consumable, literally, you know, it's more consumable practically in our heads as well, figuratively, where we can kind of digest it better and say, okay, this is helping people. This is a product. This is a medicine. It's a different connotation associated with it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it's also really important to note and to keep in consideration that, you know, the whole cannabis legalization process and movement in California started in the 90s. You know, 1996 had Prop 215 passed, which was the first use of compassionate care for cannabis in the States and, you know, probably the world. I don't know if the world, but, you know, one of the earlier sort of, you know, movements. But, you know, in Panama, we're not even there yet. You know, compassionate use is still very, very, very minimal and very, very case by case, you know, basis. And, you know, the government refuses to still, you know, sort of issue permits towards that. So, you know, we're working very hard on the law, you know, and this all involves, you know, education, empowerment, you know, really, you know, going down to the people and explaining to them that this is not trafficking drugs, that this is a different thing, that this, you know, it's about healing and it's about, you know, giving safe access to patients. And, you know, also the other issues that creating a regulated industry does, like, you know, in Panama, we also had, you know, not as big as in the US or in Canada or everywhere else, like a vaping crisis, but, you know, there were no cases, but, you know, people were getting vape products illegally that had, you know, all sorts of other components that, you know, people don't know what's in there because it's unregulated.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing is, like, you know, people want to throw the baby out the bathwater. And, you know, when they actually ban these products, when there's lack of proper regulation or you know, silly laws enacted that really aren't practical, it actually gives that black market more more of a push, being able to succeed more because people can't get it, you know, legally. And they can't get the products they want. So there's always going to be a black market. Of course there is. And it's probably going to cost less because there's not less regulation, less hoops to jump through. And it's just a matter of, at that point, you know, instituting the right laws and regulation there to prevent that from happening in the long run.
Exactly.
Very good. So, you know, you have an amazing background, you know, in banking. You have a great, you know, history, you know, as a venture capitalist, as an angel investor. And you have now, you know, you have Canalis, you know, as we're speaking, Canalis Capital. So how do you transition over here from the banking world? You said it was kind of the serendipitous early investment. Can you kind of walk me through, you know, what it was getting into cannabis, you know, learning kind of the ins and outs of the whole industry?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I'll go a bit back to, you know, sort of give you a bit more background on myself. But, you know, I grew up in a family business down here in Panama, you know, and we were always focusing, you know, brands, you know, we mainly work, you know, with big brands and do distribution for them across Latin America. So, you know, we take things and concepts that work in the developed countries and tropicalize them, meaning that we adapt them to the local culture, you know, to make sure that there's penetration and sales in the region. So I was always very, very in touch and had high affinity for brands. And I really got to see the difference that brands make in the world. You know, since I was 7, 8 years old, I would go to, you know, our retail stores and, you know, sell shoes every day, every summer, you know, during Christmas time, which was always, you know, hardest time of the year for sales. And I thought my whole life that I was going to go into that business. Then, you know, I went to university. I worked in banking for a couple of years. I moved back and, you know, after having so much exposure to the world, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to leave my mark and not, you know, just follow the family business. Rather than, you know, take from them, I wanted to bring something new that would, you know, really expand what they do and, you know, complement what you know, what they're doing and their current business. So, you know, I started looking at different industries that, you know, had some potential. And, you know, coming from the States, I really saw that the stigma for cannabis was disappearing. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you were in Panama, you know, the stigma was, you know, blazing wide, you know, wild stigma. You know, you couldn't say cannabis out loud. People would look at you with a weird face. I said, hey, how about I, you know, get acquainted with, you know, what cannabis is, you know, how it really works. And, you know, once it, you know, moves downwards to Latin America, you know, I can help, you know, shape the outcome here and, you know, really help make it something impactful that benefits, you know, the majority and ends up being a responsible industry. You know, also coming from a brand background, I was always convinced that there would be a high commoditization of product once supply catches up to the high demand, which is not caught up yet because of regulation. Once that does, there will be a certain differentiation for, you know, certain products that, you know, would be associated to certain ideas or to certain people that people would prefer and say, hey, you know, why do I buy Nike over a generic shoe? Mm-hmm. It's still a shoe, but I'm paying a massive premium because, you know, it's a Nike and it ensures quality and it brings in a whole lot of other values. So I started looking at the cannabis industry, you know, started researching and looking for projects called, you know, beyond cultivation, you know, stuff that wasn't just growing cannabis, but that was building something else. And I met Lauren Gerdner, who is one of the co-founders of Tokyo Smoke together with his son, Alan Gerdner. And Lauren had a completely different view about the cannabis industry that was highly coherent to, you know, sort of this thought that I had that there would be massive commoditization. He wanted to build a brand that would represent the vast majority of cannabis consumers around the world. He would create a product that, you know, would be consumed by, you know, responsible people and that would be consumed by sophisticated people and that, you know, people wouldn't be categorized or, you know, discriminated for consuming cannabis. He called this brand Tokyo Smoke. And as soon as I met him and saw his vision and understood what he was doing, you know, it really felt like something that I wanted to be a part of. So I quickly, you know, joined the board, raised some capital for him, invested myself and, you know, tried to help them, you know, grow and develop and apply the learnings we've had with the various brands we've worked with, you know, throughout our family business, you know, really adapted into the cannabis industry. What struck me the most about that investment and what I thought it was so brilliant was, you know, the way they really described it in saying that if you look at the alcohol industry, 50% of the product is consumed by 10% of the consumers. And those are alcoholics. And there's no one really marketing for alcoholics. The marketing goes to the 90%, which consumes the other half of alcohol throughout the year. And that's like, you know, Corona, find your beach, you know, Blue Label, you know, take your yacht out and have some scotch, or, you know, Grey Goose, go to a party. And, you know, that was not in the cannabis industry yet. Everything was green. Everything was about the plant. Everything, mm-hmm. you know, was very sort of stoner culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I thought they were really, really, you know, hitting it where the industry needed it. So, you know, I supported them and, you know, had the privilege of, you know, being part of the Tokyo Smoke family. And that ended up being a fantastic investment, thank God.
No, that's great. And then, like you said, it's great intro. And especially with your background with branding. Now, we've had, you know, multiple people on the podcast who are also, you know, amazing branding or have great brands. Nicole Connors with Saku. And Carlo DeCierto, he's also very into branding and how to protect the brands. Now, considering the fact that this is obviously a growing industry, not established, and like we mentioned earlier, there are certain barriers coming in still associated with stigma, right? Like you mentioned, you know, the stoner culture, and you mentioned how everything's green, and you mentioned, you know, we're talking off the air, you know, about how everything's can or associated with Kush or this. You know, everyone's got a cute play on words, cute name on it. Where it's still kind of like holding on to that kind of ideology that we're also trying to break away from, you know, ironically enough. So, you know, do the same principles apply, you know, with Nike, with Coke, that they apply in the cannabis world at this stage? Because, you know, we're still kind of trying to bring in those new clients, those new customers, those people who are kind of, you know, coming in with trepidation, testing the waters a little bit. Maybe they, you know, had their own experience with cannabis previously when they're, you know, decades ago, and now they're maybe looking at it again, or people who maybe were completely opposed to it and coming back in. You know, these are kind of barriers you may not see in other industries. Does the branding kind of work the same, or are there certain other factors that you have to take into consideration?
So I think ultimately it will work that way. But I think we need to sort of go through a really thorough process before we get to that point. And that's because of the whole baggage of, you know, prohibition and the impact it's had over the last, you know, couple, like multiple decades. You know, but at the end of the day, when you think of a brand, you know, it's mainly two things. Firstly, you have sort of the you know, quality component where, you know, the brand guarantees that, you know, this is made a certain way and to a certain quality standard. And, you know, the people that made it have certain values. And that's sort of the first part. The second part is more aspirational. You know, it's, you know, if I use this product, you know, I'll feel this way, or I'll behave this way, or I'll be considered this way. And you see this, you know, with many fashion brands, or, you know, even with, you know, Coca-Cola. Like, why would you go somewhere and pick a Coca-Cola? Why? There's, you know, it's because of that aspiration that, you know, you want, and you know, the nice ads they do everywhere, and the other, you know, athletes and other important people and idols you have that are consuming it. So, you know, I think it will eventually go that way. But, you know, it's still extremely fragmented. Like, you know, if you ask 100 people what their top cannabis brand is, you'll probably get, you know, many, many, many different answers. There's still no brand that has been established. And, you know, there's many reasons for that. Firstly, it's still illegal in many places. You know, secondly, you know, the flow and move across borders is extremely complicated. So, you know, this doesn't flow as easily as well, and brands and companies can grow, you know, organically across borders. You know, but, you know, once federal legalization occurs, you know, I do think that there's going to be a huge consolidation, and brands are going to be able to, you know, really, really, you know, make their mark and, you know, capture their niche. And, you know, I think there's space for everyone also. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different niches and so many different categories and so many different people that will be using cannabis for different reasons, mm-hmm. that, you know, different companies can sort of, you know, laser focus on a particular segment and, you know, capture that and build a brand for that. You know, call it, you know, hospice care, or, you know, the elder community, or, you know, call it, you know, epileptic children, that, you know, just like Advil is a brand, you know, you can have a brand for medicine as well. Or, you know, it could be, you know, mid 20-year-old, you know, surfer, or, you know, you name it. There's, you know, hundreds of different segments where brands can focus, and eventually they're going to be sort of finding their place. But, you know, I think that's still yet to come, given the regulations and the prohibitions that are in place to most companies.
Well, that's a great point about the, you know, how it's still globally, it's, you know, you can't just trade from here to there. So, you know, like you said, even from state to state, it could be, you know, there's so many regulations. So we see it a little bit more maybe in CBD, but not obviously not in THC products.
And even county to county, there's differences. Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah. So within states, even if you're, you know, legally able to sell within a state, there's some counties where your product may not enter. So there's really, really a lot of complexities. And, you know, I believe in, you know, really sticking to the law. I think what's most important, law may sometimes, you know, not make sense. But, you know, we can blame them. No one has ever done this before. And this is going to be an evolutionary project, you know, constantly be making the law better and better and better, you know. But, you know, I truly believe in sticking to the law and, you know, really, really abiding by it as much as we can. If you can have higher standards than it, you know, also do it. But I, you know, it's important to stay within the boundaries of the law and do everything according to law to be able to grow, you know, as the industry grows in a legal manner.
Definitely. And we've spoken extensively on this podcast with different people about how important it is to not just follow the law and to stay compliant, but also, you know, to have a higher standard of ethics, have a higher standard of integrity. But these brands are the ones that are going to survive in the long run, you know, because, you know, you see here, we mentioned the vape crisis, you know, and how a lot of these brands are, you know, are they already black market or not? And they were affected, you know, so now the, you know, the ones who are still around are going to have an upper hand in that regard. Now, you mentioned something also very interesting, you know, about actually, you know, niching down, how, like, you know, how far we are still from creating those kind of brands, because, you know, we can look at, like, there's certain things that people are looking at, you know, with pets or with wellness, you know, general wellness term, or you mentioned elders, and you mentioned, you know, so the baby boomers, obviously, you know, as they get older, they're a huge population there to hone in on. And, you know, the mid 20s, right? But within all those groups, there's still more niching down to be able to do, to be able to, like, to get that laser focus, like you said.
Absolutely.
So what's, you know, how can we kind of tap into that, you know, break into, you know, scratch the surface, you know, much more as we've only been scratching the surface, I should say. How can we get deeper into niching down?
So I think that's a really interesting point. And, you know, I think technology is going to really, really help us do this much, much faster than it has been done before. You know, I think my guess would be through micro influencers. You know, now you have people that have, you know, anywhere from 10,000 followers to a couple million, that are not necessarily, you know, celebrities or, you know, people that, you know, everyone's going to know, but they have their loyal following and the people that, you know, are watching their posts, are looking at their stories, you know, even get notifications every time they post something. And, you know, they aspire to be like them and they listen to them. So, you know, this gives a great platform for, you know, education and, you know, and product exposure from, you know, the micro influencers to their consumers, you know, and micro influencers tend to get their following for usually for a particular reason, either, you know, they're really good dancers or they're really good skaters or, you know, it's sort of like a very specific, you know, sort of reason why they're followed, why they're popular, why they're famous. And, you know, I think that if brands start exploiting that and say, okay, you know, I want to focus on the niche of, you know, 20 to 25 year old skaters. So you start looking at, you know, and with the data and the analytics that we have available today, you know, you can really, really capture that segment and, you know, really get them to, you know, understand what your product is. You know, obviously you want to create a product that, you know, caters their needs and that, you know, really solves a problem for them. And if you really, really hit them, you know, it's much more authentic because then they're going to want to transfer that to their followers and their following because it did good for them. So, you know, I'd say make a good product that, you know, really solves the issues and then have an authentic distribution that can really educate, you know, your potential customer base. That's what I say is the main things.
That's incredible. Yeah, definitely. You know, you look about, you know, how people are following, like you said, dancers, could be skaters, could be all kinds of different things that people are interested in. You see now, talk about influencer, you know, Rob Gronkowski, who's partnered up with CBD Medic and, you know, and they brought him and his whole thing is sports, right? That he's like, if CBD was legal, if cannabis was legal in the NFL, I'd still be playing, you know, because I've seen so much benefits from it. And it was something I could only use in the off season to repair my body as opposed to during the season, you know, as I'm getting my ass kicked. So that's really interesting. Now,
and then that has a huge sort of impact on, you know, the broader community, everyone that loves football and has been following, you know, the Patriots and, you know, there are a couple of Super Bowl wins, more than that, you know, they're going to be admiring him. And if they hear him saying, this has helped me so much, I take it every day to heal, you know, all the issues that I had during the season, you know, people are going to start using it. So that's, you know, really an authentic influencer that's, you know, really embodying, you know, CBD Medic, you know, is using it, is saying how that affects him and people, you know, are able to connect very strongly with that, in my opinion.
Definitely telling stories, and so much about branding is being able to tell stories and being able to reach people. That's what people are interested in. That's what we're here to do as well. So, you know, aside from, you know, Canalis and everything you're doing there, you're also a director of ICANN, as I said. And, you know, this is also a great story. You know, how did you get involved with ICANN, with Israel Cannabis and Sol K?
Well, so I had the opportunity to meet Sol K, who is, you know, one of the most inspiring people and one of the people that has done most for this industry that I know. And, you know, I have, you know, deep Jewish roots and I've been to Israel and, you know, I love Israel. And I was at a conference in Berlin and, you know, I see this guy that's wearing a kippah with the cannabis leaf. And not only that, but it was Holocaust Remembrance Day in Berlin, and he's wearing a bright blue shirt with an Israeli flag that says made in 1948. So when I saw that, I'm like, okay, I need to be friends with this guy. So, you know, I went to him, said hi, you know, we got along, you know, of course, knew a bunch of people in common, you know, and I really wanted to bring him to Panama because I said, you know, Panama needs what you're doing. You know, ICANN does, you know, one of the premier conferences in the space. And there's sort of, you know, TED Talks meet TechCrunch, you know, bringing in the thought leaders, bringing in sort of the people that are breaking ground, that are doing, you know, new things and, you know, really, really trying to revolutionize the space and find, you know, what's next. And he was doing that, you know, really going internationally. You know, ICANN has done multiple conferences in Israel. They did one in the UK. They did one in Australia, they did one in Hong Kong. And I said, hey, you know, they should really be in Panama. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a hard sell because Panama, you know, back then it was highly, highly stigmatized. You know, of course there were no laws, there was nothing, but you know, this is an educational product. So, you know, I thought how much we could help our community locally if we bring in the education, if we bring in, you know, responsible people doing cannabis all over the world to show the local population the medical benefits and the economical, you know, potential that this may have. So we made a bet, and I told him that, you know, if I won, he'd have to come down to Panama. And if I lost, I'd have to go to Israel, which, you know, wasn't that much of a downside either. I ended up winning the bet. You know, he came down, you know, really, really, really got along, decided to work together. I joined his board, made an investment, and also raised some capital for him. I have been advising him since, and we made a 600-person conference back in February in Panama. And it was really, you know, sort of a huge catalyst to, you know, really, really push legalization forward, to, you know, really push the conversation of, you know, what cannabis is, of what it does, what it doesn't, you know, the good, the bad, the ugly, because, you know, it's important to understand that, you know, you have to be careful with cannabis. You know, it's not just like you can leave it there. You know, there's psychoactive components. You know, there's a lot of considerations to have with cannabis, and it's important to know, you know, how to handle it in, you know, every form. And, you know, it takes a lot of education to be able to manipulate it. So the education part is very important to me. And I think it's what, you know, defines the difference between success and failure in the regulation, having an educated population. And since then, I've been helping him, you know, expand, do conferences elsewhere, you know, and really give access to information to other people. And, you know, I guess on ICANN, another really interesting, concept that Salt taught me was that in the cannabis industry, we're not educating. We're doing something harder. We're re-educating. Because usually when you're learning something, you sort of build on top and build on top and build on top. You know, you learn addition, they learn subtraction, they learn multiplication, then division, you sort of go above on that. In cannabis, you have been misinformed for about 80 years. So, you know, we need to first forget everything we know, have an open mind, and then start learning again, you know, what really is behind this, you know, fantastic plan, you know. And I'm not saying it's all good. There's also, you know, bad things and danger. And, you know, if once you're responsible with it, there could be harm. But education is at the core, or re-education is at the core of where I see this going.
That's amazing. Yeah, definitely, you know, Israel obviously leading the way there with research, you know, very proud, been doing this for so long. So it's really fitting that you're involved in that. That's awesome. Is it okay to ask what the bet was?
Yeah, so basically we're going out to a party, and there's a club in Berlin, which is one of the most competitive club scenes in the world. And he said he could walk in there wearing that, you know, bright blue Israel flag t-shirt. And I've been to Berlin. I've been bounced from clubs in Berlin, and it's, you know, impossible to make it. So, you know, I knew he wasn't going to be able to go in, but, you know, Saul being Saul and as confident as he is, you know, he gave it his best shot and wasn't able to go, thankfully. And, you know, you can go and ask him today, and he'll still say it's one of the best bets he's lost.
Amazing. Opportunity, right? Opportunity comes in weird ways. So that's great.
Yeah, opportunity, and, you know, putting yourself into win-win situations, you know,
yeah.
whether I won or lost that that bet, you know, something positive was going to come out of it. And, you know, I'm sure Saul thought the same way. So, you know, if you find the right people, if you find good people to associate yourself with and to spend time with, you know, good things end up forming out of that.
That's great. So before we wrap up, you know, I want to hear a little bit more about what Canalys is doing. Can you speak about some of the companies that you're excited about that you've invested in, and kind of get a little bit deeper into that?
Sure. So, you know, we're looking at, you know, companies in the space, you know, really all across the supply chain, you know, starting with Tokyo Smoke, which was a, you know, branded play, to ICANN, which is more of an education conference platform incubator play. We invested in another company called AgGas, which is a company that uses CO2, carbon dioxide, to, you know, really increase plant yield and plant sizes. So they found an efficient way to inject it into the plants, and they're looking to, you know, maximize, you know, yield and efficiency in the industry. You know, I invested in, you know, multiple retail chains in the space as well. I've invested in, you know, shell companies that their qualified transaction is to, you know, really go into the space, which is, you know, an excellent sort of funding mechanism for companies that are looking for quick capital. I invested in a company called Kaya, which was the first vertically integrated cannabis company in Jamaica. And they have, you know, cultivation, production, retail. They have, you know, research projects with the university there. I invested in, you know, company called Confident Cannabis, which has a software for testing labs in the States to, you know, really help testing labs be more efficient. And I guess sort of my biggest investment up to date, and the one that I've been most involved with, is a company called Chiron Life Sciences out of Colombia. Chiron received one of the first licenses in Colombia, and they're looking to become, you know, truly a vertically integrated player across Latin America. So Chiron currently has offices in Colombia and Chile and Peru and Uruguay, Mexico and Panama, and a capital markets office in Toronto. Chiron is listed in the TSX. And, you know, in Colombia, we're already cultivating. We actually bought a clinic in Colombia with 120,000 patients called Islands. 120,000 patients currently being treated for chronic pain, for sleep disorders, for neurological disorders. And these are all, as you know, many of the potential ailments that could be, you know, really, really treated with cannabis. So, you know, we're, of course, managing that clinic right now with, you know, general medicine. But as cannabis starts evolving and being more available in Colombia, we're going to look to convert those patients into cannabis, if it makes sense, of course. It's not for everyone. But we already have a strong subset of patients that, you know, will be able to use cannabis and better their, you know, health and their state using, you know, this new alternative medicine. And also, you know, Chiron is a sole supplier for Project 21, which is a clinical trial the UK will be conducting on cannabis. Chiron is, sorry, the sole Latin American distributor to this project. Chiron also has a cosmetic brand called Cuida, which has been selling in Colombia. And last week, they managed to enter the United States with first sales in California. And actually, yesterday, Chiron finally got awarded the final permit to commercialize THC domestically and for the export market. So, you know, stuff moving, a lot happening. You know, we're looking at a diversified, you know, number of companies and looking to get involved in as many different ways as they can.
Yeah, Chiron, I was definitely doing a lot of research on Chiron. Very exciting stuff you got going on there, definitely. Now, you know, with you're a branding expert, you know, so that's one big problem, obviously. Especially like you said, you know, probably in this industry is probably better because, like you said, there aren't any big brands. Now, another problem that we have within this industry is obviously the restrictions, regulations associated with marketing, with ads. You know, have you found any obstacles in the way of some of these companies you've invested because of those regulations, or how you've been able to bring awareness to these companies without, you know, being able to just turn on ads and do traditional kind of marketing techniques?
Well, that has been quite the challenge. And it's funny you call it traditional because, you know, I guess now Instagram and Facebook and Google have all become, you know, the traditional marketing methods. But, you know, with brands like Cuida, where we're not allowed to advertise on Facebook, where we're not allowed to advertise on Google, we've had to resort to putting billboards, which, you know, I guess is the real traditional advertising method. You know, again, also we have micro influencers that, you know, are really using, you know, our cosmetic products and our skincare products, and, you know, they really make a difference for them. And they're excited to share it with their following and, you know, with the people that are listening to them and really teaching them, you know, how that works. So the micro-influencer method that I mentioned before is also being used. You know, it's very difficult because it depends on a country-by-country basis given regulations. You know, for example, if you look at Canada, it's extremely difficult to market because if you're a plant-touching company, you know, you're almost, you know, have to market like a cigarette company, uh-huh, where, you know, you have those white boxes with black letters. So, you know, sort of all products look the same. So that, you know, poses huge challenges for brands to be able to differentiate themselves when so many things have to be uniform and, you know, just like the other brand. So it's very difficult. It's a big challenge. And, you know, I guess that's why no big brand has been able to be born yet. But, you know, as those barriers start to be, you know, torn down and the industry starts to normalize, you know, I do think that we'll increasingly see more of what we call today traditional marketing methods, you know, really boost and, you know, build brands.
No, definitely. I mean, that's pretty much everybody's main pain point, I would think, or not main pain point, but we got a lot of pain points in this.
A lot of pain points.
Sure. That's for sure. You know, but this is a big one. That's for sure. So
yeah, yeah.
Separating, like you said, this is what's going to help people to make that, make those big brands, you know. Big brands are because, not just because they're obviously amazing products, they have a great team, right? But, you know, great branding, but also that people know who they are, right? You Absolutely. Can, you know, if you can have a McDonald's in the, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, whatever. Just as an example, if you have McDonald's in a forest and no one knows about it, then, you know, no one's going to go there. It could be any of the best products, right? In-N-Out, you know, could be anything. But
I guess, you know, the other thing that I'd say is that, you know, these companies will not be built on sort of a first buy, but, you know, return customers. So I guess, you know, one challenge is to get the customer to go to your store and to buy your specific product. The other one is to have him keep coming and buying your products too. So, you know, I guess the best marketing strategy would be to have a good product, because once they try it, they'll be coming back and they'll be hooked to it. And if you really solve their problem, and, you know, if you really have an ointment that really, really solves, you know, backaches or, you know, any pains, and people take it and it works, they're going to keep coming back without the need of any other marketing. And even better, because they're going to be, you know, mavens for you, and they're going to be distributing your product, and, you know, word of mouth is, ends up being, you know, the strongest, you know, method of distribution, I guess. And, you know, once it becomes viral, as we've seen with many things, you know, it can really, really take off.
No, there's no doubt about that. No, definitely. And obviously, you know, product is always number one. You have to have the right product, because even if you have the best marketing techniques, the best plan, you know, and somebody comes, you get all these people to try it, and they're like, this is shit. You know what I mean? No one's going to come back, so it doesn't really matter. Definitely, you know, people have to, you know, having the best product, you have to be able to let people know. So very good. So, you know, as we come wrapping up, you know, I always ask everybody, you know, and you obviously have a great background, you know, how do you define success, and what does success look like for you?
I mean, I guess success ultimately means achieving your goals. Then I think the real question is where you set your goals. You know, I think that, you know, there's financial success, which is one thing, but, you know, I think I define success more in terms of, you know, a legacy and an impact. You know, really, really what you do that, you know, helps people, you know, that changes the course of history, that, you know, really, really, you know, gives others the opportunity to, you know, lead a better life and, you know, have access to, you know, aspirational things. You know, there's, for example, to give you the example of Panama, you know, there's so many people here that don't have the means to travel somewhere and get cannabis medicine and get treated for stuff that they know already works. If I can, you know, at least push a little bit the law, you know, get it through and have them be able to buy, you know, safe cannabis that's, you know, not harmful, not contaminated, that can be given to them to really, really help them, you know, heal themselves, that's a huge measure of success for me. If I can educate people and I can destigmatize people and I can change their mind on what cannabis is, you know, that is success to me, because they're going to be able to spread that and, you know, really, really distribute healing and health and wellness. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, we need to all be responsible for each other, and, you know, the world's a difficult place now. So, you know, I guess the more you can help and touch other people's lives and, you know, educate and, you know, lead people and be their example, and I consider that success.
That's great. And I love what you said too, you know, about education and re-education, you know, what you mentioned earlier. So, what can we expect from Canalys in the future?
Well, you know, we try to, you know, stay ahead of the curve. You know, we are trying to find what the next thing in cannabis will be, you know, whether it's cannabis or not. You know, I sort of started with cannabis because I started as a very disruptive force. You know, I'm really looking for, you know, disruptive industries, you know, things that are changing, you know, industries that have very few rules that you can sort of go and, you know, help write them, or, you know, help, you know, lead the way with, you know, an impact, a north on, you know, impact and, you know, creating wellness for most people. So, you know, I guess other industries I'm excited about, you know, esports, I think they're going to be huge. There's a massive population already watching esports, and that's going to grow as demographics evolve. You know, if you look at the oil and gas industry, it's about to become really interesting. In January 1st, 2020, the International Maritime Organization is decreasing the cap on sulfur allowed in fuel. So right now they allow 3.5%. On January 1st, it's going to be 0.5%. So think about the ramifications that that's going to have from, you know, the raw material you're using, to the refineries, to the engines of the boats. 90% of global trade goes through water. So that's something that I'm really excited about that's going to impact it. So I'm really always looking for, you know, what's new, what's changing. Of course, there's lots of innovation in cannabis still left. I mean, I'm really excited about it, but, you know, always looking for other industries as well that, you know, you can do something with.
Yeah, the 0.5%, you know, it's funny, you know, had a geneticist on recently. He was talking about how having 0.3% as the standard mark for CBD with THC, you know, this with THC, it's like, it's ridiculous, you know, but this is here, something natural. So now we got to good. I'm glad that we're going to regulate that a little bit more, and we'll see where the chips fall. Very good. So Ray, tell our listeners how we can find out more about Canalys, what you got going on, and connect with you.
Sure. So we have a website. It doesn't have much. We like to keep it mysterious, but you know, it has our email. The website is www.canalyscapital.com. There's a team email you can reach me, and I'd be happy to, you know, connect or answer any questions. If you know anyone's coming through Panama, I'd be happy to, you know, host, assist. You know, I love my country, and you know, I think it's there's a lot of opportunity here and a lot of things to do and fun stuff and beaches and hiking and, you know, diving and fishing and whatnot. So if anyone's around here, I'd be happy to show them around.
Amazing. Well, thanks, Ray. Thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Thanks again for jumping on with us, and good luck. Now we're entering 2020 and beyond, this whole decade.
Awesome. Thank you, mate.
Thanks so much. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com, that's CALACANN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.